Hey everybody, welcome to Hit Rewind. This episode, we're going to be discussing four werewolf movies. No particular... You know, usually we do like eras, Kersey and I, we do like 96, 97 or something like that. You know, we're kind of working our way up through the 90s. But there's a few that we've missed here and there. And I thought, hey, this is a good time to grab four werewolf movies off our list. Our master list of like...
We'll theme them or we'll kind of combine them in some kind of way. But yeah, this is just kind of... I don't want to say scrape in the bottom of the barrel, but casting a net.
This is the closest I think we've come to trash cinema in a while, which was our old show. I kind of want to refer to things that we do like, I mean, I made a list for it too. It's like at the drive-in, like those kind of features. I know the drive-in isn't very popular anymore, but there's a very particular type of like B-movie, C-movie genre of films that always played at those. So the first one is, wow, it's amazing that two of the four movies are sequels that are truly a plummet off a fucking cliff from the original.
Yeah.
Now, here's the weird thing is, okay, so Howling 2 and American Werewolf in Paris. The people who made Howling 2 were clearly just trying to cash in on a name that was successful enough. You know, a low-budget, weirdo exploitation film. But American Werewolf in Paris, you can almost see they were trying and they were just clueless.
That one is just sad.
Yeah, it had money behind it and a real studio, and I can't fucking believe. I will watch The Howling 2 about 10 more times in my life. I'm sure of it. I'm never watching American Werewolf in Paris again, ever. I've owned three of the four movies here, by the way, on Blu-ray. Oh, no, at least
okay.
On DVD. No, on DVD. Yeah. Sorry.
Two of those I could defend.
Okay. So, American Werewolf in Paris. I'm going to start because it's just a massive, hideous piece of shit. I can't believe that after all those years of wanting to get the film going and not liking John Landis's script that he had, this is what they wanted to go with. And...
yeah.
I guess technically it is connected to the first movie. Jenny Agutter's character, who survived, got impregnated by David. And so this is their child many years later. And the idea is interesting because it's about kind of curing the disease and, you know, and keeping it at bay in any way you can, either chaining them up or using medicine. I kind of like that idea. The problem is the guys in this are the dumbest motherfuckers you've ever met in your life. Almost every single character in this has the most incomprehensible behavior. No people act like this.
Yeah. Okay. So I do want to stress though that the actors also hate this movie because they were lied to about what movie they were signing on for.
So, really?
Like, when I was looking this up, basically the original John Landis script, I think, was what they were given when they signed on, and it had a lot more. It was a lot more closely connected to the original, and it was one that they barely wanted to take seriously. And then there was like three or four just scripts coming in, and then they had to like, okay, so which one are we doing? And then it was just kind of an amalgam of bullshit. So that's how this movie was born. So as you can tell, not great.
Yeah.
It basically is the main character is on a daredevil tour with his two college buddies through Europe. And I guess daredeviling also includes having sex with women. I don't know how those things are related.
It's extreme, bro!
Yeah, exactly. So the only thing I can think of is that they're actually gay and having sex with a woman is, like, terrifying to them.
Yeah.
That's the only
this
way
is
I can
thrill.
Make that make sense.
Yeah. Well, it's let's just say this. Immediately, the main character should be dead. You go off the Eiffel fucking tower, that's not how bungee jumping works, period. You have to have some sort of clear space. There's no clear space. That's why they do them under bridges. They don't do them under the fucking Eiffel Tower. You would die, which he smashes his head, and at that speed, bare minimum, severe brain damage and a broken neck. Like, you're gonna have to weld that shit together.
Yeah, I don't understand how... I just don't get it. I don't know what's happening. They go onto the Eiffel Tower to do a bungee jump off, but his buddies don't know that that's what they're doing. They think the daredevil stunt is just staying past closing on the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, low rent. It's like 12-year-old
really
kind of.
I don't understand how, like, he clearly brought climbing equipment or like bungee equipment, but they didn't think about it until after they got up there. It just baffles
no,
my mind.
Dude, they're all the stupidest people. Seriously, it's see, the problem is, how do you watch the first movie and those likable characters and go, yeah, this is what we're copying, but not like getting that they were sympathetic, intelligent characters and just throwing all that out? This almost feels like a spoof script. Like, so the guys that wrote this, they were comedic writers. They wrote for television the sketch comedy show called The Idiot Box. They wrote this really great horror spoof called Freaked. And I'm wondering if they were hired just to write a werewolf movie and didn't understand what it was connected to. They were just like, let's make this really insane werewolf comedy with a bunch of fucking idiots. Let's combine like Dumb and Dumber, you know, or Bill and Ted with a monster movie, that kind of idea.
Right, because like the movie is fighting with itself about what it's trying to be and who the characters are, what the goal is. Like the whole Daredevil tour thing, it reminded me of like The Simpsons, where the opening inciting incident has nothing to do with the episode that's
yeah.
about to happen. That the Daredevil thing never comes back after the Eiffel Tower thing.
The thing that drives me crazy is that he has no self-awareness, any clue what's going on. He's always like, Serafina, I think that was her name. What is going on? Why are you doing this? Like, it's always like the highest pitched, dopiest horse shit. You almost assume there's a hand up his ass because he's actually a Muppet.
Yeah, and it's so weird that he keeps, like, it's, okay, so it's obviously, you know, modern day, it's creepy. I don't know if it's creepy back then, probably, but basically this woman wanted to throw herself off of the Eiffel Tower, and they were there at the time, and he bungee jumped to save her, which he did, and then proceeds to just follow her around and hit on her.
Yeah.
Increasingly creepy in weird ways.
Well, immediately he's in love. He's found his dream girl. He won't leave her alone. That right there is the basis of a horror movie. And then she becomes a werewolf just to stop her, her stalker. Who's hunting who?
And of course she pulls out her breasts like immediately. I guess, no, it wasn't immediately. No, it does come up later.
Right, it's after he gets bitten.
But I should say, for no reason, she pulls out her breasts.
She's like,
and makes it really creepy.
Well, she's like, touch them, they'll calm you down. I don't know how you think men function, at least straight men function. that's not going to calm me down. That's going to get my heart racing.
Yeah, I don't know if the best cure for a concussion is to feel breasts. I don't think scientifically that makes sense.
The entire movie for his character is like watching Jackass. He gets hit and smashed and thrown into things and bitten and thrown around and tossed down. Every 5 minutes, he is severely injured. Anybody else would have been like, this is the end of my character. I'm going home.
Yeah, and like the first, like, was that like the first half of the movie? Like, nothing was happening. It was just, he follows this woman around. And then she gets away from him, thank God, because she shouldn't be alone with him.
Yeah.
And then that just keeps happening over and over again, and he will not let her go. And then eventually the werewolf stuff happens.
Yeah, it's like it's almost as if it was two different scripts they put together. Like, this is like a disturbing romantic, you know, kind of movie, you know, like one of those boyfriend from hell kind of movies. And then all of a sudden, oh, we're 45 minutes into this. The werewolf thing finally happened. But in the original, you're talking, what, in the first 10 minutes, they have set up. Well, they automatically set up this whole tone of kind of uncomfortability, like awkwardness, and, you know, like when you're in that bar.
Yeah, like walking into something that they don't understand, and neither do you as the audience, but something is off. And it just kind of, it leaves you with this lingering feeling of dread. Whereas this movie leaves you confused.
Oh, my God, the CGI. Sweet fucking Jesus. There's only one moment in this. So when I was subscribing to Variety magazine back during when this was being made, because that's the only way. This is before IMDb. It's like 3 years before IMDb. You had no idea what was being made, you know, what was being produced, whatever, except if you had something like Variety. It would literally tell you every movie that was in production, going into production, or about to go into production. It would show you the cast and directors and stuff like that. And they were talking about this, and I got super excited. And then they showed, like, congratulations to the cast and crew or whatever, the special effects team on American Werewolf in Paris. And it shows that one scene where it comes out through the, you know, it busts through the window, and it's kind of like paws are in the window inside the house, whatever. I thought that was a really cool. I don't know if that was CGI or stop motion. Everything else is blurry shit. They should not have done this. It does not work. 1997 special effects, unless you got Spielberg money, is not good.
Or if you're going to combine practical and CGI, or if you're going to like use the lighting effectively, like I'm going to compliment. Oh man, what is that one with the bikers?
Skinwalkers.
Skinwalkers. I'm going to compliment that one a lot on its visual effects.
Well, that's because Stan Winston was involved. So that's because
they were very smart about how they did that.
Yeah.
This one, not so much. They clearly didn't have the budget, and they didn't plan around that.
Yeah, it's like you. I didn't know the thing about the whole script being changed, but yeah, even the director who was originally attached, who was much more talented, I think, it had more experience, was let go after John Landis. So here's the thing: is John Landis took his ideas from that script and then just rewrote it for Innocent Blood. You know that movie we did a couple years ago about the vampire and the cop?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that originally started as seeds that were planted in the American Werewolf sequel. And then you end up with Anthony Waller, who did do a very good movie set in Paris called Mute Witness, but he had only done one little tiny budget movie, and that was it. He didn't have the experience, really, to handle this kind of movie. But I think the bigger problem is the script, and everybody's fucking dumb. If a weirdo guy with a greasy face who's eating raw meat basically with his bare hands comes up to you and shoves his nose in your underwear...
Oh, like, dude, I forgot about that.
What the
I
fuck?
I forgot it got worse. Holy yeah. Shit.
This movie has clear hatred of Americans. It's spoof. Like, the whole thing is like, we are werewolves, but we only hunt Americans. I love Americans because they taste great, these fucking shitheads, you know? And every American in this movie is dumb as a brick.
That's why I think they like Americans, because they're too dumb to realize what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. I did like the villain. I thought he was fun and sinister, but everything else just doesn't work for me. And I was just like, I can't believe this is one of the very first DVDs I ever bought. Really.
There's a really cool idea in there about like a werewolf cult where they like use this drug to intentionally turn themselves into werewolf premature.
Yeah.
That's a really cool idea, and there's a lot of stuff you can do with that, but then it just kind of, it goes nowhere. It just is brought up at the very end and then is over in one scene.
Yeah, it's... when it comes to the rules of the werewolf, do you prefer that it's only like the days of the full moon or anytime at night? I mean, I kind of find it interesting. They could just invoke it anytime they wanted with the medicine, but do you prefer the old school where it's only a full moon?
I honestly, I'm going to say yes. I think the reason for that is because it builds tension around that. Because if it could just happen every day, then there's not as much like fear as to like this going to happen. You know, like there isn't enough time to build tension.
Yeah, because in the first American Werewolf in London, isn't it every single night that he changes? Am I wrong?
I think there was a time lapse. Like he was in the hospital and then staying with this woman for a month.
Oh, okay.
But again, that's a really good part of the movie. At least it works for me because, like, you have hope that maybe he won't turn into a werewolf. Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it's in his head. Maybe he'll find some way out of this. Like, there's that build up, and then there's that scene where he's just reading, and then all of a sudden he just like goes crazy, and then that's when the really good transformation happens. So like, there's really good build up to that.
Yeah, I'm really shocked that they didn't bother trying to find a new way to do a transformation. Like, you got the money, why are you still doing it? I mean, you just saw the greatest. In the original, the greatest transformation in horror movie history, and this one, they're like, well, we're just going to do it in very dark clouds and not really, like, make it blurry and you can't tell.
Yeah, and then they're going to walk around very awkwardly.
Yeah.
Like their werewolves are about to shit their pants.
At least it looked more like a wolf in this one, because I've always had problems with the bear wolf in the first movie.
Yeah.
So in The Howling 2, look, legendary trash classic. I recorded this off TV when I was like 16 or 17, but you know, fully edited, no nudity whatsoever. I watched this maybe 15, 20 times. It is very fast paced and very weird and very entertaining, even though it is clearly not good.
How I mean, even people in it again, it's another one of those where people don't like it legitimately. I think Sybil Danning, who's in it, was like, this is the best fad movie I've made.
Well, she ran out of the theater crying when they repeated her breast shot over and over and over in the credits.
17 times.
I fucking That's love that song, by the way. I can't remember the name of the band, but I love that song.
Yeah, no, that song is great. I thought it was weird that the song happens diegetically. Like, it happens in the movie. Like, it's not a thing that's just happening in ambiently,
uh-huh.
Right? But there's no crowd sound anymore. Like, the crowd just cuts out for the song. It's very strange and abrupt, but it is a good song.
I'm still stunned that AFCO Embassy never did any sequels to their hits. There's no Howling, their Escape from New York. All these Scanners, all these that got sequels were not done by the original company. They just sold off the rights. And no wonder they went out of business. I don't understand what they were trying to do. So another company took over on this. They spent double the money of the first movie. I do not see the money.
I don't buy it.
Yeah. So I just got done reading. I got a book from England. It was an import. It was a complete history of The Howling. It is a fucking terrible half-assed book. I found myself reading chapters where the guy was talking about the movie, and then he would interview people about the movie, and literally you are like, wait, I just read all of this from the interview because you put this in the article. Why didn't you separate these, you incompetent baboon? But they talked about the fact that Felipe Mora got the job because he had done this really terrible horror movie, which is all bladder effects, called The Beast Within, which, I shit you not, a giant cicada rapes a woman and has a baby. And it's a half man, half cicada. That's horny.
Okay. Yeah.
So he got the job because he knew how to handle special effects. He had already worked with Christopher Lee, and he had already worked with Reb Brown, the guy, you know, who screams all the time. Look, I have never seen a movie where he doesn't do that insane yell. It's mind-boggling.
But that to me is what sold me on it. Because like, I was afraid he wasn't going to scream while shooting a gun, and that's like the only thing he's really good at.
Yeah, I'm wondering.
I was so happy when he started doing it.
If the money that was spent was to get the rights, and also, like they said, they were constantly having to pay off Romanian government because they were constantly blackmailing. I was like, where's the stuff to shoot our scene? Oh, we don't know unless you give us $1,000 or whatever. Like, ah, shit, okay.
Oh, that's probably where the budget went then.
Yeah, and they had no costumes. When they asked the studio where the werewolf costumes were, they're like, they're in the boxes that we sent you, and they open them up, and they were the old Planet of the Apes costumes from 10 years earlier.
Yeah, I read about that too.
Holy shit. So I guess they had to make the masks, because those are not Planet of the Apes masks, but that's, I guess, why so much of it is shot in the dark. That whole final sequence where they're chasing. Isn't that such a fun sequence? I don't know why. Just watching them get picked off one by one, but it's just nonstop action. And Christopher Lee throwing like weird little rune stones and diamond, whatever, like magic stuff, and blowing them up.
I don't know. I was kind of getting a little bored. It went on a little too long for my taste.
And I love the Romanian setting. There's something in itself unsettling and weird because it's so alien to us and ancient.
Yeah, it definitely kind of evokes that feeling.
The whole gypsy thing and the puppets and the architecture, I just absolutely adored it. In general, the performances are pretty terrible. Even Christopher Lee seems baffled. Like, I feel like the narration and some of the stuff that was added in was just to make some sort of coherency of it all. Like, this doesn't make any sense. Let me go in front of this astral projection screen to explain.
You know what, the best anecdote that I read about this movie was the director was talking about how he wanted to film that church with all the skulls, and usually stuff like that you wouldn't be allowed to do because, like, they were going to be shooting, like, gruesome death scenes in there. And so he asked the pastor, it's like, is that okay for us to do? And he says, yeah, go for it. He's like, okay, but this is blasphemous, isn't it? Are you sure it's okay? And he says, yeah, we've been trying to get the Vatican down here forever to bless this place. So you doing this is going to make them come here.
The the sex scene in this is so bizarre because they weren't allowed to touch each other because of the glue and the hair was always going to get stuck. So they just kind of like, for an orgy, it's pretty tame because they're just going, arr, 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 arr.
I was going to say that scene was downright adorable because like their shitty costumes made them look like Care Bears. Uh-huh. And so it looked like they were just like hanging out in bed together. It was weird.
I think this is the first movie to ever show the hair. Like, they, of course, it's played in reverse, so they would shove the hair through the... they would pull it through.
And yeah, they pulled it back, yeah.
Yeah, they pull it through or whatever in reverse. And I was like, I think that's the first time I've ever seen that in a werewolf transformation is in this movie.
Did American Werewolf in London come out before this one?
You know what, you're right. It did do that in that. I'm sorry, yeah. I'm being a doofus. I forgot.
Jackson did it for his music video for Thriller.
Sorry, I just forgot I just said that. And of course, I don't really want to discuss any of the sequels. If you're going to watch anything after this, I mean, this is the height of new wave, crazy, weird trash. I do like part 6, the one that's set at a carnival or a freak show. Have you ever seen that one, The Freaks?
No, I didn't know it went up to 6. Jesus.
There's actually 8.
Oh my god.
So 3 is in Australia from the same director. He bought the rights after this studio said, oh fuck. And it's supposed to be really dark Australian comedy, and it's about marsupial werewolves where the werewolves are the heroes.
Okay, I'm interested.
4 is literally a remake of the first movie on no budget whatsoever in South Africa. It's called The Original Nightmare. Okay. Part 5 is a remake of 10 Little Indians by Agatha Christie in a castle. That one's not bad. The main actress, though, is real terrible, and there's 2 seconds of a werewolf. So 6 is The Freaks, the carnival one. That's the one where it's another protagonist that's a werewolf, that he's kind of just on the run from a detective who's trying to find him. And he joins this circus, and it's run by a very evil vampire played by Bruce Payne, the bad guy from Passenger 57 and Highlander Endgame, that Dungeons & Dragons movie. It's pretty nifty, and it's got good effects. Then 7 is a budget of about $75,000 with, again, 5 seconds of a werewolf. And it's basically about this Australian guy that hangs out in this little town in Arizona, and it's just nothing happens. It's so bad. And then there's The Howling Reborn, which was nearly a decade later, which is basically Twilight. It's all set in a high school. It's not bad for what it is.
Really?
Yes. I have it. It's in my voodoo. I actually kind of enjoyed it. But just be fair, it's you know, Canadian, low-budget, almost TV movie-ish.
Right. So, like, for the positives of this movie is definitely the soundtrack. But there's some really decent comedy in it too, but I don't know if it was intentional.
Yeah, Christopher Lee in those new wave glasses
kind of makes it funnier.
Yeah. Its
setting is also really good. And yeah. Red Brown screaming, holding a gun is always fantastic. So if you're into those things, it's pretty good. I was not a huge fan. I was because I know like it had, this movie has a kind of. Like so bad it's good sort of legend to it that I was expecting a little bit more, but I think that's just me hyping it up in my head too much before I watched it.
Yeah, that can happen. So the next one is Bad Moon. I absolutely adore the book by Wayne Smith. It's called Thor, based on the dog's name, but I understand why they had to change it because they don't want to think it was like, you know, Greek mythology or whatever. The book is interesting because it's all first-person narrative from the dog.
Yeah.
And it kind of locks in on how a dog's brain thinks. Sometimes it doesn't understand who people are for a while until it smells them. It forgets things all the time because it's a lot of short-term memory and impulse or whatever. So the movie, of course, couldn't tell it from that point of view unless it was going to be an animated movie.
You have to like hear the dog's like voiceover, and it would just be that would just be a nightmare.
Yeah,
it makes sense to not do that.
I actually love this movie despite its flaws. I know people say the acting sucks. I'm not gonna argue with them. Even like I think Marilyn Hemingway at times can be a very good actress. Star 80 is phenomenal. For some reason, something about this movie feels off for her. I know it was intended for Gina Davis, but whatever, it fell through. the kid is, you know, a kid actor. You know, it's like, gee, mom, what's going on? What's a flopsy? You know, that kind of stuff. And I know that Michael Perret, who plays the brother, who's a werewolf, has been called stiff a lot of times. I thought he was okay. There's certain moments where he's really good, especially when he's evil.
Yeah, I thought he did a pretty decent job because it's, for him, at least, like, trying to think about where he's at in the story, it's... the reason why I think he plays it like that is because he's realizing that he'll never be cured, and he's trying to figure out what he's going to do next with his life. Like, is he going to try to end it? Is he going to run away? Like, so for me, those moments of him being stilted, or just kind of not being mentally there, for me, really works for his character once you figure out what's going on.
Well, yeah, I think there's a mental distance, and he may be there at the moment, but he's not present. He's always lost in his head, and he's constantly having to play like a game of avoidance with the questions that she keeps asking.
Yeah.
So the beginning is gore-tastic. A lot of the stuff is really just low-budget, you know, B-movie horror stuff. Hey, I'm in the middle of the night and I'm doing... Why are you working in the middle of the night, dude? You can't see. Are you behind? Why? What are you... this electrician guy. And then, like, a werewolf from out of nowhere upside down chomps his head. Okay. I'll buy it, I guess.
Watching the opening, I was prepared for a very different movie. Oh. I didn't know it was going to be mostly one location.
Yeah, it's a horny movie in the beginning. Holy crap. That's like, apparently it got trimmed down a lot because they got an X rating from all the humping.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think what really works is that dog fucking rules. It's the best.
Oh my god, yeah.
Best Holy movie shit. Dog in history, right?
Yeah.
And I love
See,
the
when
costume.
When they were taking him to the pound, I was like, I swear to God, if they kill this dog, I'm going to throw this movie out the window.
Yeah. I wouldn't have showed you a movie where the dog died. I would try not to show you a movie where the dog dies. I forgot. We're eventually going to discuss Cabin Fever. And we did just...
that's fine if it works for the story, but like I'm just saying, I wouldn't be like mad at you. I would be mad because like I would feel like personally feel the injustice of it. Yeah. Like that's how good it is, or how good that dog is. I would get personally invested in a movie, and I don't usually do that, so that's how good it is.
I don't know, I haven't watched the digital version of this, because I had the Blu-ray, where they fix the transformation scene. I think this is maybe the best physical, like practical effects werewolf I've ever seen. Like really up close, and yes, you can see the movements, the puppetry in the face. But I think its design is amazing, and when he changes into the werewolf towards the end of the movie, the first time they did it was very early CGI, and they tried to make it an homage to the old shadowy effects of the the Universal werewolf movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the CGI, and it's all stilted. It's the worst fucking thing you've ever seen in a studio release. I know this was barely released, like on 300 screens, but still, it's a Warner Brothers movie, for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
But I believe the digital version, like the Blu-ray, they went back in and tried to clean it up and make it look a lot better. Mm-hmm. But it's a hell of a showdown. You really do not know if Thor is going to live through this.
Yeah, and I know that we just spoiled it for you guys. So sorry about that, but it's still really good.
Yeah. Our last one is interesting.
Okay, I do want to say one thing
that
I didn't like about the movie is that, well, I mean, there's a few nitpicks in there, but like the major flaw is that the main actress, or the main character, I should say, is like a lawyer. But we never see her do any work ever. She just basically a stay-at-home mom, and that's not a problem, but like she's a single mother. I would want a little more like work-life balance and like how she has to balance working, having a kid, also like having an estranged brother back home and how she deals with all of that.
Yeah,
instead of just like they bring up the fact that she's a single mom but don't do anything with it.
Like you would see her like having her home office doing paperwork or taking phone calls or something like that.
Or has to leave the house, and then she has to leave the house with a guy who we know is a werewolf, so there's kind of like tension there about what he's going to do when they're alone.
Yeah.
Like something like that would be good.
The Skinwalkers, most of these movies were independent, barely released kind of movies. I remember seeing commercials for Skinwalkers on TV, but it didn't really make much money. Lionsgate just kind of dumped it. I can kind of see that there might not be an audience for it, but if you look at, like, just sell Stan Winston's name as a production guy or whatever and doing the special effects, and make it, sell it as like an action horror film, you know, like Blade and stuff like that, because those were hot at that time. It is funny how you kind of think it's a John Woo-ish heist crime movie for the first half hour. Like, you're not sure what the fuck is going on.
Right. It definitely has like a lot of whooshing, moving camera kind of thing. But what I really did appreciate about it at first, it's very subdued in a lot of ways too, which I wasn't expecting.
Well, and
it's usually like a lot of cheap movies or TV shows, whatever, like that don't have a lot of faith in its writing or its style, is to just kind of permeate music constantly throughout every scene to try to like artificially make tension by just having like unsettling music, but to just kind of let a scene play out and to try to feel it, I think is really, especially for a movie this cheap, my God, is pretty good. And I actually ended up enjoying it a lot.
I like the angle, and they don't do it very often. I think it's only happened like one or two other times, is the lore of werewolves is always like some sort of demonic curse. You have to be bitten. That's the only way it is. Whereas this one is, like Wolfen from 1981, it kind of goes into more of the tribal mythology kind of world. Like, it's not just you get bitten and you're cursed. It's something that if you wanted to, you can try to control, that it's a birthright kind of thing, and that there's a split in the groups.
Yeah, I really liked that element to it. I liked how we see how people try to prevent themselves from wolfing out, how to like hold back. And this is also in Bad Moon, where he would chain himself to a tree.
Yeah.
But like they have like full-on straitjackets, and not only is that just like really cool visually to see, especially when they're wolfed out in those straitjackets, but it also comes back later in a really clever way in a really good scene.
And I like the fact that you become almost like possessed, almost like a zombie or some sort of demon possession. You are a werewolf and you have the urge to kill, but you're not technically like bad, I guess. Like your physiology changes until you actually taste human blood.
Yeah, like you can just be a regular person, but once you've like tasted the blood, you get a craze, and it sort of turns you into a bloodthirsty monster.
Yeah, because they don't.
I think it like also gives you like extra power. I'm not sure. There's like some other kind of thing with it. Like it's akin to taking drugs or being a drug addict.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, that one woman, she hasn't changed yet, but she gets shot, like, sort of got like five fucking times, like a shotgun blast to the chest, but she still doesn't die. So, I'm assuming they have some sort of protective, and it doesn't do the silver bullet rule. It's just flat out, like, just shoot him in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, I also especially love, like, it's very Western inspired.
Yeah.
In its style, especially, like, the bikers, like the evil werewolves are kind of like a biker gang, which looks really silly, and it's very cheap, and you know the sets, the costumes look terrible, and but like despite all of that, like the scene of them having just a straight up shootout in this small town was amazing.
And it also, like, the motorcycles kind of recall, like, the horses in old westerns. I mean, they're in a weird southern, like, ghost town almost, where it's just one sheriff and a few locals, that kind of idea. I wish it hadn't descended into, oh, we're going to go to an abandoned warehouse. That's, like, the worst cliche you can see in lower budget movies.
It was losing me there, yeah.
Yeah, but I do like that whole emotional tearing apart of making these choices. Like, do you sacrifice your family to save this boy? How badly do you not want to be a werewolf anymore, you know, in order to sacrifice this kid who I don't understand why he has this gift? I'm trying to figure this one out.
They didn't explain, and that's okay. It's basically both sides of this issue are guided by a prophecy that neither side fully understands, but they believe with religious zeal, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it really interesting, because you no one really fully understands or can explain it, and that's okay. Like, you don't really have to justify, because it's a movie about werewolves, so yeah. It's fine.
Well,
like,
that's
we
not...
don't need to know. We don't need to fully understand it. It just has to have a specific, like, driving force, and the driving force is that this kid is somehow going to end the werewolf curse forever.
Yeah.
But no one understands how.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, how did he become a werewolf? Because as you find out more and more about the father, this is what I'm trying to figure out. So the main female, she's completely human. She's not related to any of them. But I swear, there is a moment where she's trying to ask, like, wait, I thought that he was killed in the attack and that he was bitten by a werewolf. I don't understand what that was. So he was born a werewolf just like his brother, and they thought he was killed and he was kidnapped, and is that when he tasted human blood and became evil? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't know. There definitely feels like there's a scene missing.
Yeah, and also, like, is seriously, in the history of werewolves, that's the first werewolf to have sex with a human and have a baby? Do most of the babies just die, or are they mostly sterile? I don't understand.
Yeah. In a lot of movies, they would be like, you know, they would sit down at a campfire and, like, fully explain the lore, and they don't do that for this movie, which I think is great, but it's also a hindrance in trying to understand what the hell is happening.
You know what this movie needed? It needed Christopher Lee against an astral projection screen.
This really, but with those glasses he had on in that night.
Yeah, absolutely. No. But also in biker gear. I mean, it has a little bit of the cheesy, almost because all the leather, I felt a little bit like Matrix-y feel to it, a little bit. But
and also, I want to point out how it's, like, at the end, the werewolf costume was not great, and also the lady werewolf still had a bra on. That was very strange. Like I said, costume design, not great.
It's unique. I've never seen anything that looked like that before. Stan Winston was clearly trying to do something new.
Yeah, and given the budget, you can tell just by looking at it that this was a shoestring budget. I don't know if they did, like, oh, let's do another take of that. There probably wasn't much of that going on.
Yeah, it's Stan Winston.
It's not perfect, but, like, if you can look past flaws like that, I think this is probably my favorite out of all of them.
When you look at Stan Winston's career, when it comes to straight up, you got hired to create characters, do the special effects, fine. When it comes to him producing and directing, it gets a little more questionable because there's Pumpkinhead, a gnome named Norm, which I have to say slowly or I trip over it, and then he produced Wrong Turn, this, and then he did a bunch of remakes of old sci-fi films for Showtime. That's about it. No real big. Yeah, you would think a name like that would be like, oh yeah, he produced all these great horror movies. He's like our generation's version of, you know, like Roger Corman or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it didn't
happen. I do also want to bring up, there's a really awkward scene that I hated where the little kid who's 12 years old is hitting on a nurse for some reason.
Oh yeah, that was weird, right? Like out of nowhere.
That was very gross.
Yeah, I was like, did the injury bring out like your puberty? What's going on here?
I thought that was going to be like his werewolf side was coming out, like that he was going to be like turning into one, but that never happened. It just, like, he just straight up hit on an adult for no reason.
Weird. All right, so those are our four werewolf movies. I honestly cannot figure out what to do next. I'll no teasers until I figure it out. All right, thank you everybody, and Kersey, send us out.
All right, have a good night, folks.